Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. When it comes to the war on Iran, we can clearly observe parallel universes. In the Trump universe, there is a demand that Iran accept defeat. In the other universe, the United States is experiencing a massive strategic defeat. Obviously, this war is far from over. Next stop, boots on the ground. Cross-talking Trump's war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Oklahoma City, we have Joshua Landis. He is director of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. And here in Moscow, we cross to Eddie Gonzalez. He is co-host of the political talk show Russia Up Close. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Joshua in Oklahoma City, let me go to you first here. You know, this all started on February 28th. And every morning I wake up, I pinch myself. No, this is like a bad dream. This is not actually happening. Because even a month in, I am shocked that this is going on. And there appears to be no way out at this point in time. I thought this was something that was supposed to be avoided. But here we are. We're back doing it again. Joshua.
Yes, you're absolutely right. War games, both the CIA, DOD, so forth, have all shown that America should not get into this war because there was no way of getting out of it. And here, you know, President Trump clearly reevaluated that. And first of all, he didn't listen to his State Department. He didn't listen to the experts at the CIA. He was in a small group of people who were telling him what he wanted to hear and encouraging him to go in, saying he could do this very quickly. And now we are, you know, a month into this, and prices of oil have gone up through the roof, and Iran is in control of Hormuz Straits. And this is a very embarrassing position for the United States.
You know, Lionel, you know, I'm getting into the habit of just doing one Trump quote per program. There's so many. But here's the latest banger. This is the president speaking, his words. Iran wanted to make me their supreme leader, but refused and said, no thanks. What is this all about?
You got to warn me next time. I think I missed that one. You know, Peter, look, I try this so many ways. I think to myself, I must be too close to it. So what I do is I go and I look for the most ardent of support, somebody out there who says, yes, this makes sense, because maybe I'm missing something. Because, Peter, my good friend, we keep saying the same thing. Remember the Colin Powell, the Pottery Barn adage, if you break it, you own it, and have a battle plan. And also, what I like to call the art of the deal. There has to be something in it for you. I have to give you a way out. And I also have to save face so I can remove, absent myself from it, and everybody's happy. I can't figure it out. I'm asking myself, if I represented Iran or any other country, and I said, here is the deal that's being presented, what would be the bases for it? What would I use to say, here is why this is a good idea? You basically have the following. You are being asked to dismantle any nuclear programs, which we have heard before, there is nothing to dismantle. No enrichment, ICBM or missile limits, and end proxy ties, and maybe we'll reconsider the notion of regime change, whatever that is. And your benefit is...
But Lionel, this is what we heard before February 28th. This is what we heard before the 12-day war. So let me kick it over to Eddie right now. I mean, it's quite obvious that diplomacy is not a category of American foreign policy anymore. I mean, who in their right mind is going to sit down with Witkoff and Jared Kushner? Who in their right mind is going to do that right now? But the current president of the United States says that they are involved in this process, in which the other side said, we didn't pick up the phone. We have no idea what you're talking about. Eddie.
How can you use diplomacy when you say peace through strength? This is your diplomatic narrative, peace through strength. And they had no other options because diplomacy, that's all they know, is let's go and use our military. And then we have the secretary of the Department of War that is hungering for a victory. We have the Trump administration also hungry for a victory to distract from the economic problems and all of the other social problems that are happening in America. So let's go and do something in Iran. This is what we do. This is what America does. We bomb other countries as a way
But Eddie, wanting a victory is not a strategy, and this is what the problem is here. Let's go back to Oklahoma City. Joshua, that's the problem here. There is no strategy. And to add to that, the Americans and the Israelis appear to be on different pages, if not different books, right now.
Well, you're absolutely right. And the not having a strategy, we clearly miscalculated terribly about the depth of the Iranian regime, how difficult it would be to overthrow it. And once we discovered that we couldn't get regime change, the president was really left sort of blustering in front of the cameras, because now he has to negotiate with the Iranian regime. And he's going to have to come up with something that is going to make them happy. And the world, he cannot hide the fact that he's going to have to negotiate with them, unless he decides to go the Israeli path, which is to break Iran and turn it into a failed state, which is what we did in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, Libya. And none of the powers in the region or the world want that to happen, because it would be a disaster economically and every other way. So he's really stuck here. And the international community doesn't trust him anymore. We saw the British ambassador, the Omani foreign minister, who were engaged in talks. And the British ambassador came out of those talks and said, yes, we had a deal to permanently stop nuclear enrichment. But more than that, we looked at Witkoff and Jared Kushner as Israeli agents. We discounted them. Now, the world is clearly looking at this as America having been captured by these Israeli interests. And they're trying to figure out what is America doing here? Are they pursuing their own national interests, or are they just teaming up with Israel and being dragged along in something? And that's what we're going to find out. Can President Trump stop this war in the next week, which is what he's, at least according to the Wall Street Journal, is what he's asking his principals to do. Can he do that? Or will he be dragged along further down this road?
Yeah, I mean, meanwhile, and the numbers, they're very out there, between 5,000 and 50,000 troops are en route to the region, various sources on that. Lionel, everything that we know about this man in the Oval Office, and of course, he's been part of our lives for a good part of a decade now, my sense is he's just going to double down. What do you think, Lionel?
Well, I always believe that reality always is the final arbiter, where it says, no, there is no doubling down. There will be a clean absenting exit, whatever you want to call it. But may I just say something here? Because as you know, Peter, I'm here from the fishbowl. I'm here in New York City, and I am very good at being able to tell you what people are seeing, what my compatriots are saying, what American cable news watchers, not the conoscenti, all five, but just people who are watching this. And one of the biggest problems we have is that we've never been able to understand who these people are. When you talk about the Iranians, you say, do you have any idea of what this Persian mentality is? A civilization that has been, these are some of the smartest people. But I'm telling you, and I'm sorry to say this, I think that there's this perception that they're living in the 14th century or something. They see somebody with a hat, they see somebody, they talk about theocratic muftis or people, women being pulled aside
the same token, I'm agreeing with you, on the same token, in the American mind, in the American narrative about Iran, it's always 1979.
Well, and dare I say, we have these ideas when it comes to Russian ideology. We live in the Boris and Natasha world. We live in times maybe framed by either, I don't know, music or movies or what have you. But the bottom line is very simply this. I believe that eventually, very quickly, as soon as you can imagine, victory will be declared. That's it. We're back. Let's move on. We've got midterms. Victory, that's it. And people will say, what is that? And it's what we've done in every, not just President Trump, but from the beginning. We always say, what was that all about? We wake up from the dream it's over.
Yeah, but I've been over this ground before, Eddie. I mean, a lot of people have said, Trump, just declare victory and leave. The problem with that is that Iran has veto power over it.
Well, Trump also said that he would end the Ukraine war in 24 hours. 24 hours turned into 100 days, turned into 6 weeks, and now we're 2 years down the road, almost. So what can be different? What can Trump do different in this particular situation? So where he can't stop or hasn't been able to stop the Ukraine war, which, if you ask me, it's a very simple way to do it, just stop the arms and stop the money. With Iran, it presents a different problem because whereas Ukraine is a country, Iran is a civilization.
Exactly.
And they've got a centuries deep history that Americans just do not understand. And as Lionel just said, we do not know who these people are. In America, most Americans don't know who Iranians are. We only hear what the mainstream media tells us is like, well, they're chanting death to America.
Well, Eddie, you and I know what that narrative is. Like I said, going all the way back to 1979. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt myself. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war on Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war on Iran. Okay, let's go back to Joshua. Joshua, ever since this conflict started and they didn't get the instant result that they wanted, is regime change, a la Venezuela, and that even that wasn't regime change. The way the constellation of forces are lined up, there will be negotiations, but not like the Trump administration thinks there will be. Trump has presented presumably 15 points, all points that we know of that were there before the conflict, even before the 12-day war. I would posit here, yet there will be negotiating points, but Iran is going to determine those negotiating points, meaning they are driving this now. Trump has lost control. Joshua.
Well, you're right. And the big difference between this and Ukraine is that in Ukraine, we have Europe as a backstop. So even though the United States pulls out of the Ukrainian war, Europe is there to pick up the price tag, to buy the American weapons, and to counter Russia. In the Straits of Hormuz, there is no power that's going to step in and take charge. America is going to have to negotiate some kind of opening of the Hormuz with Iran. And otherwise, the international community is going to sink into recession, and it's going to be a terrible economic crisis. And that, of course, threatens America in the long run, because the more money we spend on this, the further we get, our debt explodes, and we face a real economic crisis. And the world is going to face an economic crisis, and they're going to blame America. So this is going to put tremendous pressure on President Trump to become more humble, which will be very difficult for him, but to make a deal with the Iranians that suit the Iranians, that allow the Iranians. And we already saw him talking this way, saying, me and the Ayatollah are going to run the Straits of Hormuz as a toll booth. We're going to share the income. But Iran's going to demand lifting of sanctions. It's going to demand some guarantees that it's not going to be attacked within 6 more months, and that it's going to share the income from ships going through the Straits of Hormuz. And that's going to be very painful, painful for our Arab allies and painful for us. And it's going to leave Iran perhaps in a stronger position than it came out of this. Of course, it's going to be devastated militarily. There's no doubt about that. But politically, Iran is going to have gained something possibly out of this. And that's what makes these negotiations so difficult, and why Trump is avoiding is really doesn't know what to do. He's stuck in the headlights now a bit, trying to figure out how to get out of this.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie, I mean, we've made so much focus on Trump, which is important here and correct. But this is just a reflection of the inability of the United States to actually involve itself in real diplomacy, in real negotiations. Also, I would point out, this is the first time since the Second World War that the United States has attacked a country that can actually defend itself. He was not prepared for that. Eddie.
No, they were not prepared for that because, well, America has been bottlenecked and bottled down in a proxy war with Russia in Ukraine. So there's a depleted stocks of ammunition. They haven't been training for this particular war, whereas Iran has been prepping and preparing for this confrontation since at least 1979. So Iran was ready for whatever America or even Israel could throw at them. And America was caught off guard 100%.
I think we have to go much further than that. I mean, you know, the history of since the Second World War of bombing, you know what? It doesn't work. It doesn't give you the outcome you want, okay? And so here we go again. No, because it's a Muslim country, it's global south, poor, blah, 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 it'll be a walk in the park. This is what's fundamentally wrong here. It's an imperialist mindset. Eddie.
No, absolutely it is. And this is America's playbook. This is what they know best. They figured we can do the same thing that we did in Gulf War I, Gulf War II. This is what we do. We carpet bomb.
Eddie, sorry to interrupt you, but at least they had a strategy then, okay? It was a failed strategy, but you and I, all of us remember the run-up to the war. I mean, the propaganda was sophisticated. Everybody was on point, you know, blah. CNN gave us all those beautiful videos. I mean, they sold the war. This wasn't even sold to us. Eddie,
no, not at all. It caught everybody by surprise. No one thought that this could happen. And suddenly, Trump, who promised no more wars, was suddenly ready to go to war with Iran, caught everybody off guard.
Okay, Lionel, I guess maybe trying to unlock the mystery of all of this, it was Venezuela. They convinced him that Iran is no different than Venezuela. I don't think, a knowledgeable teenager would say, no, they're kind of different, okay? Is that what was the bill that was sold to him, was this will be just like Venezuela? Because in Trump's commentary, he keeps bringing it up.
Well, perhaps I think, to use a legal term, it's almost like a fungible argument that they're all the same. You know, Peter, again, as I try to explain to my friends, here's what we're looking at. I'm trying to think of an analogy. Have you ever heard about the Widowmaker, this left anterior descending little cardiac vessel? This little tiny little piece, if blocked, kills you. It doesn't seem like much. And if you look at it, it doesn't look like much. But that little piece of coronary real estate is critical. The Strait of Hormuz, by virtue of the way it's configured, the way it's turned, the tininess, I said, this little place may not look like much to you, may look like we can go in and we can bomb it. This controls everything. And another thing, which is, I thought we learned, it's funny, the smarter we get, the more basic our warfare becomes. What if I told you that I can take your multi-billion-dollar defense system and I can use balsa drones with lawnmower engines? You would say, you're out of your mind.
Yep.
Watch me. Because what I'm doing is, it comes down to these people who say, let's see what you've got. Let's use our firepower. We'll just sit back and wait. And also the notion of boots on the ground. if there's one phrase I want to get rid of, is this stupid, quaint idea that we're going to be, what, greeted as liberators? I mean, we have got, I don't know what century we're talking about. The days of Paris, Peter, of people welcoming us, women taking off their veils. Thank you.
Yeah, they killed 170 little girls on the first day, okay, and they're going to welcome us? Really? Hey, Joshua, you know, one of the things that I find very vexing is that when they keep talking about Kerguelen and the Strait of Hormuz, you know, if we just cut that up. You know, the Iranians, of course, they need their oil exports for their economy, which has essentially been unsanctioned, but they're defending their country and the Islamic Revolution. They're not defending their oil, and it's misunderstood in Western media. Joshua.
Well, you're right. Let me go back to this question of why did Trump do this? How did we miscalculate so badly? And I think there's a few important answers to that. And one is that if you look at America's intervention into other countries since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the United States has almost doubled the frequency and violence in which it enters into other countries since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And you ask yourself, why would America do that? Because we have no peer competitor. We were this moment of being completely safe in the world. And I think the answer to that is that we can, because America was so powerful, it could thrash little countries like Libya or Syria, Iraq, and not expect any other power in the world to enter into those frays in order to counter the United States, as had happened during the Cold War. Secondly, Iran acted with incredible restraint when we killed Soleimani, when we bombed them over the summer with Israel. It did not respond. And that lulled America into this sense, and President Trump into the sense that we could smack Iran and they would, you know, they would whimper. And then thirdly, Israel has had one spectacular success after the next. And I think that President Trump was very impressed with Israel's attack on Hezbollah using high technology, its ability to penetrate the Iranian intelligence community and spot who was where. And he put his faith in Israel's hands, thinking they know what they're doing in the Middle East, they have the intelligence, and all I have to do is hook my wagon, America's wagon, to Israel, and they will bring me an incredible success. And I think those three factors all led to this moment.
Yeah, but Joshua, at the same time, while agreeing with you, is that Israel's design is to have a destroyed Iran and a war that the Americans will continue on for him, and that's one part of the deception that Trump.
You're absolutely right.
Keep going.
Very different agendas. We have two very different agendas. Israel's agenda is to break Iran and turn it into a failed state, the way it has with Syria and Lebanon and so forth, because that's good for their defense. Iran has been a major threat to them. If they can break it, then it can't rebuild. It'll take decades to rebuild.
And Joshua, on top of it, the Israelis would be more than happy to see the Americans leave the Gulf monarchies, so they would have hegemony in the region. It works out for them every step of the way. If it works, and it probably won't. 30 seconds, Joshua, finish it off for us.
Well, it's quite clear that President Trump doesn't have any faith in the Shah's son. He hasn't spoken to him. He hasn't brought him to Washington. He hasn't had a photo op with him. He's flying by the seat of his pants. He doesn't know. We don't know who the opposition in Iran, because there is no organized opposition in Iran. He talked momentarily to the Kurds and others, you know, this idea of breaking Iran up and trying to divide the various ethnic groups. And he abandoned it because the entire regional community, including the Kurds, said, we don't want to do this. So that gave incredible authority to the mullahs, because they looked around and they realized there is no, Washington and Israel do not have a tool to break us apart.
Yep, self-ratioed. Gentlemen, fascinating discussion. Thank you. I want to thank my guests in New York, Moscow, and in Oklahoma City. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, cross-talk rules.